Nuketown Radioactive number 74 for Monday, December 1st, 2008. On this episode of Nuketown Radioactive, I dream of a good night's sleep, remember the adventure that is potty training with my son, recount my Xbox 360 woes, talk about the boatload of games that I've been reviewing over the last month, try out the Is Good URL shortener, test drive the Obsidian Portal gaming wiki, and geek out over the new Star Wars role-playing game Game Master Screen. Welcome to Nuketown Radioactive, the occasional podcast about life, liberty, and the pursuit of geekdom. I'm your host, Ken Newquist, and, oh, folks, I am tired. It has been, just a siege for the last couple of weeks. There has been just so much stuff going on, both at work, at home, with the kids. I guess we should start with the kids, right? Because mine decided to stop sleeping. I don't know exactly why they did this. I don't know if they've been collaborating in their downtime. You know, when we think that they're playing with trucks or a little pet shop, maybe they're conspiring to wake us up at 2 o'clock in the morning. But in any case, whoa, you know, we went through this siege where they got sick, and that led to them, you know, coming to bed with us, waking up in the middle of the night, whatever. And I think, you know, it just kind of threw us for a loop. It's been really hard to get back on our regular schedule again. It's been really hard for them to just kind of get back to sleeping through the night. I don't know exactly what it is. Now, we went through a really bad siege, really kind of around the end of October, beginning of November. I think for about 3 weeks, it seemed like they just could not sleep through the night. One, both, whatever. One way or another, Sue and I were getting up in the middle of the night, and it's just, you know, it's just exhausting not to be able to sleep. You kind of forget about it, you know? They kind of lulled us into a false sense of security because, for the most part, they've been really good sleepers. And then, boom, we hit the fall, and it just gets really, really hard. So things have kind of been getting back on schedule, but now we are into the adventure that is potty training, and that has given rise to a whole new set of sleeping challenges. I guess about 2 weeks ago, my son Luke decided that, hey, you know, now's a pretty good time to do this whole potty training thing. He decided he was tired of diapers, and he took it upon himself to start using the potty, which is great, you know, because we don't have to spend as much money on diapers. He's pretty much only wearing diapers now when he goes down for a night's sleep. He's not even wearing them for his nap. But man, you know, that also means that 2 o'clock in the morning, he's waking up and telling us that he needs to go potty, which is great. You know, you want him to do that. But at the same time, you really just want to sleep. And, you know, we had just gotten out of the sickness thing. We're trying to get back on a regular schedule, and boom, now we're into potty training. So, wow. It's a good thing. I shouldn't complain. You know, it's one of those kind of just, I hate to say it, but paradigm shifts where all of a sudden, you know, you go from the diaper routine where, you know, you're going through a couple different diaper changes a day to all of a sudden now you're on the potty routine. And, you know, Luke's telling us that he needs to go potty and, you know, you need to make sure that you have the potty seat with us because he doesn't like to sit on the actual potties when we go out to a restaurant or when we go out to, you know, just shopping or whatever. You know, and suddenly, you know, no more diapers. Suddenly, you know, you need to make sure that you're not that far away from a toilet. You know, like I've said before, one of the things that kind of surprised me most about parenting was just how much time you spend worrying about other people's use of the bathroom and when they're going potty. But so that's kind of been exhausting. But on a geeky note, the other thing that's just really been tiring, and I think it's really just sucked up almost all of my free time, has been gaming. I have been doing a huge amount of gaming over the last 6 weeks, and it's not over. I've got at least another 2 weeks of gaming lined up, and this isn't necessarily personal gaming. This is gaming reviews. As I've discussed before, I write freelance game reviews for sci-fi.com, and I've just had a really awesome run of game reviews the last couple of weeks, which is great because, you know, it pays the geeky bills, right? It'll probably get me a new digital camera, and I think it's probably going to get me a new FireWire drive for my Mac, and maybe even a new LCD monitor, but man, is it a lot of work. Now, the games that I've been playing are, generally speaking, a pretty good selection of stuff that's come out this fall. So I played Dead Space, which is a solid horror shooter that mixes things up with cool zero gravity mechanics and location-based space zombie killing, which basically means that, you know, when the zombies are coming at you on board this space hulk that you're slowly exploring, you have to shoot them in the head, you have to shoot them in the arms. Just shooting them in the body, generally speaking, does not stop these particular monsters. So I gave it a B+. Next up was Fallout 3, which, you know, I gave it a B+, but really, you know, it was a really solid B+. And the more I play it, you know, the more I think maybe it should have been, you know, like an A-. I don't know. It's very loyal to the original game, which, for those of you who aren't familiar with Fallout, is basically this post-apocalyptic role-playing game where the nukes have fallen, the biological weapons have been unleashed, and the scourges of humanity are trying to eke out a living in the radioactive wasteland that has survived. And really, it's a pretty cool game. Now, I never played Fallout 1 and 2. Well, actually, I played a little bit of them. So I wasn't really sure kind of what to expect with Fallout 3, but man, it was a lot of fun. It's by the same folks who did Oblivion, so Bethesda... Bethesda Software Company. I'm not exactly sure what the full name is. I'm having trouble remembering it off the top of my head. But in any case, it's by the same folks who did the Elder Scrolls series, most recently Oblivion for the Xbox 360, and I think for Windows PC as well. And that was a really fun game. I mean, I found I played, I think, at least 120 hours of Oblivion, and I hadn't actually finished the game. Fallout 3 is not nearly as deep or as extensive as Oblivion, but man, it was really a lot of fun, and I think the thing that it has going in its favor is that it should be a lot easier to replay than Oblivion. You know, at some point during Oblivion, I got to the point where I don't think I really want to replay the game again with a different character, just because, you know, it's just such this huge game. Fallout 3, a lot shorter, but I think that's a good thing, because in this case, you get a good world to explore, you get a good story to play through, and it's short enough that you can actually go through and play it again with a different character if you wanted to. So, really solid B+. I really enjoyed it. If you're in the mood for kind of a nice role-playing game where you can spend you know, a few dozen hours exploring a landscape, then this is the game for you. Now, the last of the games that I've reviewed recently is Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe, which was, well, I didn't really know what to expect with this. I mean, originally I thought that it was a mashup that really no one was requesting, and I still think that, but it turned out to be pretty good. They did a decent story explaining how Mortal Kombat and DC Universes come to collide. It's actually written by comic book authors, which is nice. It's very loyal to the DC Universe, and I think it also provides a good entry point to Mortal Kombat. Personally, I liked the Mortal Kombat series, you know, way back in the day when I was in college, and, you know, it was fun playing with friends, but I kind of fell out of it just because it was way too complex. You had to remember all these combos, you had to just mash all these buttons, and I enjoy the occasional fighting game, but honestly, I'd really rather play something else. So Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe, though, is a much more newbie-friendly game. It's got all the move lists built in, so you can basically pause the game, look at the move list, and then execute it. The fatalities, which are the super moves that you can do when you've actually beaten a character to hurt them in a spectacular way, those combos aren't included, but the rest of the move lists are, which is nice. And I think that it really made for a fun game to play with friends. I had some my gaming group guys over on a Monday night, and we played through it, and we just kind of had fun, you know, beating each other up. I think it's a better rental than a purchase, but, you know, that's kind of the same way that, you know, a decent movie can be a fun to rent but not necessarily buy. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing in this particular case. So, you know, if you're itching for a, you know, kind of a fun game to play with your friends, I'd check it out. Now, making all of these reviews all the more challenging was the fact that my Xbox 360 decided to die right about late October. This is the second time in 2.5 years that my 360 had died. I was just finishing up Dead Space, actually. I was looking forward to actually concluding the story when all of a sudden, the screen froze. The Xbox just stops responding entirely. I power it down, I power it back up again, and there it is, the red ring of doom, which just sucks. Unfortunately, from that point on, the 360 just would not respond anymore. So, you know, now I had to have a mad scramble to try and find a new 360 to use because I still had, I think at that point, I think I had four more games that I needed to review, right? So I went to Best Buy and found out that my Best Buy service plan that I got when I originally bought the Xbox wasn't extended the last time my Xbox died. So they wouldn't replace it for me. Instead, I had to send it back to Microsoft just when I was supposed to start reviewing Fallout 3. Can you see why it's been so exhausting the last couple of weeks? So I decided, well, you know, that's not a problem. I'll go out and rent an Xbox 360. Which turns out to be pretty much impossible. Blockbuster, Hollywood Video, these places that used to rent, you know, PlayStations, no longer rent any consoles because their repair costs were too high. So that led me to try out Rent-A-Center, which advertised online that they were renting Xboxes. So I called them up and said, okay, you know, how much is it to rent an Xbox? And they said about $20 a month, $20 a week. I thought, oh, wow. Cool, this solves my problem. I can rent it for a week or two until my Xbox gets back. It'll get me over the hump with Fallout. Perfect. So I pack Luke up in the car and we run out to Rent-A-Center, and that's when we get the fine print, which is that you can really only rent an Xbox 360 for a month, which would cost $80. Now, they were going to give me a bit of an exception and let me rent it for 3 weeks for $60, but honestly, I'm sitting there and I'm looking at it going, why would I spend $60 to $80 to rent an Xbox when I could just go out and buy a new machine for $200 and have a backup one in case my regular one dies again? So I just basically said thanks, but no thanks, and we left. Now, I fortunately was able to put the call out to my friends to borrow an Xbox 360, and I was able to borrow from two different friends for the course of about 2 weeks. That got me through Fallout 3, and I gotta say, one of the nice things about the 360, especially considering how often it dies, is that you can just pop the hard drive off. So the hard drive's actually on the outside of the machine, docked to the side of it. You can take the Xbox hard drive off, plop in a new 360, attach the hard drive, and boom, all your stuff is there, which was really nice, especially since I had to go between two different machines, you know, and then ultimately three different machines because then my original Xbox came back again. So I gotta say, I'm really disappointed that the 360 died again. This has kind of been the Achilles heel of the 360 ever since it came out. It's awesome that Microsoft has kind of manned up and extended the warranties on the 360s to 3 years. But man, you know, these things should just really not be dying this often. So subscribers know that there wasn't a new edition of Radioactive in November, largely because of all this crazy stuff that I've been doing. But that doesn't mean that I wasn't on a podcast. In fact, I was on the Secret Lair podcast, where I joined Chris Johnson and Chris Miller to review the book The Sky People by S.M. Sterling. This is basically an alternative history book in which Venus and Mars turn out to be like they were in the pulps. So instead of the space race ending at the moon, we went on to Venus and then Mars competing against the Soviets to actually colonize these planets, which is a really cool setup. But unfortunately, the setup turned out to be a lot cooler than the book. And yes, I took my lumps in having recommended this book to the Secret Lair book club. But we had a really good conversation, and I think you'll enjoy it. So you can check that out at thesecretlair.com. I'll have a link to that, as well as all the games I reviewed, in the show notes.
Hi, this is Fraser.
This is Chris.
This is Chuck.
This is David.
From the Accidental Survivors, and you're listening to Nuketown Radioactive.
So over the summer, I got together with some other web developers to work on a open source courseware program called Moodle. And we were going in and making a bunch of software patches and fixes and such. And we had to share a lot of web addresses. And one of my friends at this meetup introduced me to a web address shortener called isgood. It's available at the website is.gd. And basically what you do is you give it a web address and it creates a shorter version of that web address. And basically the same thing that you could use tinyurl for. But here's the thing. Over the summer, tinyurl was really, really flaky. And this was not. It's so far, it's been responsive every time I've been there. Seems to work really well. And I liked it. It's a very simple, easy to use little web app. So if you need to share really long URLs with people, say something that would break across multiple lines if you were going to send it via email, or perhaps if you're going to update Twitter and you want to include a long web address but you don't have enough characters, you should check out isgood. Now, another app that I came across, actually while I was working on a column for Knights at the Dinner Table, is the Obsidian Portal. And basically what this is free campaign wikis. So if you have a role-playing game campaign that you're running and you want to be able to keep track of everything that your campaign is doing, so adventure logs, NPCs, that kind of thing, you can use this wiki. Now, I've used a wiki with my Dungeons & Dragons campaign for, I guess, the last year or so, and it's been great. We've been able to keep track of a huge amount of information, and it's really been helpful. Now, that said, I'm a web developer, so I really don't have any problems with going and installing MediaWiki on a server to be able to use for the campaign wiki. This brings the same functionality to folks who are not coders, and basically allows you to just do a couple of clicks and boom, you've got a campaign wiki. This allows you to create adventure logs, which you can post as public, but can be flagged as game master only. Content within these posts can be broken down to public versus GM only, which is a really nice touch, and then all those posts can be tagged. There's a wiki, which functions as a traditional wiki, including MediaWiki style bracketed hyperlinks, which basically means you put two brackets at the beginning of a term, two brackets at the end of the term, and boom, it's hyperlinked. It has an NPC tracker, which allows you to quickly add and tag NPCs, and then to go in and edit their details, such as levels, species, biography, that kind of thing. It has basically what amounts to a guest book in the form of a comments page where people can come and leave comments about your wiki. It has a map upload tool where you can upload JPEGs or whatever to the site and it will display them. That functionality is limited in the free account, but if you upgrade to the pro, you get basically additional storage for the wiki. Now, if you get one of the premium plans, you can restrict access to the wiki to members of your party or friends. The sitemap for the site shows locations of the campaign around the country. So let's say, for example, you were looking for a game in Pennsylvania. You can go to the Obsidian portal, look at the map of the United States, click on Pennsylvania, and boom, you will see, well, I've been saying boom an awful lot in this podcast, but in any case, you can look at the sitemap and it will tell you exactly who is playing in your state, which is a nice touch. It can also share information with third-party sites. For example, you can add a wiki update and it will be instantly updated to various blog syndication services so people know that you've updated your wiki. And, I think that pretty much sums up its options. It could really use a forum associated with a campaign site, which would be really handy for play-by-posts, but I suppose you could probably get away with that with the comment threads in the adventure logs. Overall, if you're looking for a wiki to be able to coordinate your site and you don't want to maintain the code yourself, I think this is well worth checking out. You can find it at www.obsidianportal.com.
If you need help with your master plan, check out rpgpodcast.com.
So my gaming life has pretty much been as busy as every other aspect of my life over the last couple of weeks, and the big news there is that I have finally started up my Knights of the Old Republic campaign for Star Wars, which is very, very cool. I've been looking forward to this for quite some time, and I am just completely in love with the Star Wars Saga Edition rules. It plays very, very fast. So fast, in fact, that players actually aren't ready for their action because they're used to waiting for everybody else to take their turn. And it's just been a lot of fun. I think it's one of those things that after 12 years of playing in the world of Greyhawk and playing Dungeons & Dragons, it's just awesome to be able to kind of stretch your brain in different ways and play some science fiction. So we've been having just a huge amount of fun with it. And I've set up a new campaign website, which you can check out at kotor.griffcryer.com, which includes basically some session notes, some NPC write-ups, some planetary write-ups, that kind of thing. Now, in addition to starting up my Star Wars campaign, or rather, because I was starting up my Star Wars campaign, I needed a new Game Master's screen. That's right. After years of playing Dungeons & Dragons, I find myself in need of, well, a new shield, right? Now, here's the funny thing. We haven't actually been using GM screens a lot in our campaign. We've been kind of moving away from it because here's the thing, right? You stick the GM screen in front of you. It's kind of like this big towering shield thing between you and your players. And, you know, some people find that a little bit off-putting. It's also a pain to kind of reach over and that kind of thing. But the Star Wars GM screen is just a beautiful work of art. And it actually gets around this by being much smaller. So, well, actually, bigger and smaller. So let's back up for a second. What's a GM screen? Most people should know, but if you don't, here's what it is. It's a quick reference screen / Fortress of Solitude for Game Master's running Star Wars Saga Edition. The screen is low and wide. It's only about 8.5 inches tall, but nearly 2 feet long. And it's comprised of four panels, which is very nifty. It's built from heavy-duty laminated cardboard, much stronger and solid than previous edition screens or even D&D screens. The cover art is a montage of video captures and artwork from the Star Wars films and extended universe, and it's got a huge amount of information in it. In fact, this may be the most useful Game Master screen that I have ever used in my gaming life, ever. It's just amazing how good this screen is. So on the first panel, it has statistics for objects, statistics for substances, weapon ranges, and then a bunch of restricted objects. On the second panel, it has actions, combat modifiers, condition track, vehicle actions, size modifiers, and vehicle weapon ranges. The third panel has sample skill DCs, climb check DCs, deception DCs, average skill bonuses, attitude steps, perception DCs, gather information DCs, and just a whole bunch of other skillful related stuff. And the fourth panel has a cone diagram, so a lot of force effects and some weapon effects in the Star Wars Saga Edition use basically 60-foot cones. This shows you exactly how that diagram sets up. And then it's got experience points and rewards and a list of force powers from the core rulebook. All the panels are white and light blue on a black background. And man, I gotta say that it's just amazingly good. There are two things that I really enjoy about this screen. The first of which is basically just the form factor. It's nice and low, so I can see everybody. It's not this big imposing thing sitting between myself and the players. And it's less of a barrier and more of a game aid. You can still make those secret rolls if you need to, but you don't have this huge kind of wall in front of you. Every single thing that is listed on this screen's all of the skill DCs, weapon ranges, whatever, is stuff that I've needed in our playtests, particularly skill DCs, weapon ranges, and cone diagrams. I also love that this screen fits perfectly into my downstairs work area. I can actually wrap it around my laptop and see everything I need. This may be the first time that I've used a GM screen as kind of like a reference when I'm working on my game, rather than just having it at the table. This is something that I can use as a quick reference to say, okay, well, what should the skill DC be for this particular task? Now, on the downside, artwork isn't particularly inspired. I really like the cover sleeve, which features Darth Vader and the partially completed Death Star, and I wish they'd carry that over to the internal screen, but what they have is perfectly adequate. Now, some folks have complained that weapon damages weren't listed in the screen, but honestly, I'm okay with that. Players have that stuff on their sheets, or they should have that stuff on their character sheets, and they generally don't have the weapon ranges. So all things being equal, I'll take weapon ranges over weapon damage any day. So long story short, if you're a Star Wars GM, you gotta pick up the screen. It is well worth the money.
Quick, shut that door, man.
As if that's going to stop it.
Look, it's not my fault the Elder Sign didn't work.
That's because it's shaped like a star.
No, it's shaped like a tree.
Star!
Tree!
Star! Well, it's too late now. We're the last ones.
What about Lady Hetherington?
She set on fire, then exploded.
And Father O'Leary?
He plucked out his own eyeballs and ate them.
Damn. I wish I'd visited yogsothoth.com more often.
Yogsothoth.com?
Yes, you know, that Call of Cthulhu website. Jolly useful. It's got forums, news, even interviews with the great and the undead.
Oh, I do wish you hadn't said that.
Oh, my lord! Stay away from me, you horror! No!
Well, you'll not take me! What? No! Please, no!
The Yogg Radio, a Cthulhu podcast from yogsothoth.com.
That will about do it for this edition of Nuketown Radioactive. There will be another episode later this month because, hey, I've got a week off from work. Coming up on the next episode of Nuketown Radioactive, you can expect a very geeky Christmas, including an update on everybody's favorite geek tree, lots of more video game reviews, and I'll be taking a look at A Very Scary Solstice, which is a bunch of H.P. Lovecraft-inspired Christmas carols. As always, I'm looking for comments and feedback on the show. You can send them to me at nuketown@gmail.com.